Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business, all from home, from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online, downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive. In a nutshell, tell me your name, where you're located, and what your expertise is.
Sure. Thanks so much. My name is Paul Larson, and own and operate Paul Larson Consulting, LLC. What we do almost exclusively is bring solutions to subscription and recurring marketers, and the solutions are primarily regards to transactional advantages that they can take advantage of to affect as many credit card charges as possible. We're in a time of great duress with credit cards, and so fortunately, card companies and some of the processors have made some good weapons, tools, and procedures available to help mitigate some of the travail that merchants are feeling today because of various things, which we can elaborate on if you'd like. But bottom line is that we enhance bottom lines by helping affect as many charges as possible.
Paint me a picture. Let's say you've got an internet marketer out there, and he sells a subscription site, a membership site. And let's say he's got 10,000 members, and they sign up for $1, and then they are charged $19 a month on their credit card. Take me in the back room of some of the challenges and some of the problems that this membership site owner is having, the stuff that you don't see on the front end.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, of course, as you know, there's all sorts of different paradigms for subscriptions, including that very one that you just discussed, as well as many subscription companies then billing customers on a monthly basis, some on an annual basis. And what you've got now is a confluence of many issues, but let's just talk about one, and that is there has been incredible number of reissued cards just in 2009 alone. You know, we're coming off of the biggest breach in history with Heartland Merchant Services, where 130 million card accounts were stolen.
So people understand, you had 130 million credit cards stolen, so you have all these consumers, 130 million of them, who have maybe subscription payments with merchants, and then instantly those cards become null and void because they have to be reissued?
Yeah, in truth, not all 130 million card accounts were active, and not all issuers determined that all those cards need to be reissued. But even if, and we know it's true, that a small percentage of those cards were reissued, well, you know, 10% of 130 million is 13 million cards, and of course it was more than that. And if 13 million cards were reissued and on those cards were lots of recurring charges, well, what happens, of course, at a point in time like that is several bad things happen. Number one, not everyone will remember to reattach.
What does that mean? I want to really dumb it down.
Okay.
And by doing this, let's go back to our example of Mr. Internet Marketer who's got a membership site with 10,000 people, you know, who sign up to pay $19.95 a month. And you have this credit card breach. So a percentage of those 10,000, because of this breach, are going to come up decline. They're not going to go through for that business owner, correct?
That's absolutely correct.
And so do they say declined?
Yes, they do.
What is the typical merchant who doesn't have maybe your expertise or knowledge, what does he do when he gets a declined card, someone who's unaware?
When he gets a declined card, he may try it again. But, of course, if it's a card that's been reissued, then that incumbent card number is no longer any good, so you can retry it as many times as you'd like, and it's not going to go through.
But it will say declined.
It will say declined, and then most merchants will recognize the difference between some processors give pretty clear definition about what the decline is. So in this particular case, if it's related to a card that was reissued, well, the old card account number is no longer good, that will come back to the merchant, and the merchant will realize I've got very little chance of getting any success on this, even if I retry it. So then they'll begin their blocking and tackling methods with the customer, emailing them, getting in touch with them, letting them know that their card declined, and trying to secure a new payment method to continue the subscription with the customer.
Mark, why do you call it blocking and tackling methods?
Because at the end of the day, even the greatest marketers in the world have a difficult time reaching customers in that way, getting their relationship re-energized once this involuntary activity happens. Very difficult. We find most of our merchants tell us that the best of their proactive abilities to get customers to provide information to update accounts is 10%.
Okay, so that's issue number one, these big credit card breaches that nullify millions of cards, which take a hit on your membership subscriptions right there. What are some other challenges in the marketplace?
Yeah, you've got that. You've got kind of related in some way, and this is also related to the economy, is you've had a massive shredding of plastic. So proactively, issuers have shut down 80 million credit card accounts in 2009.
Meaning people are getting rid of their credit cards.
Meaning issuers are shutting them down.
Oh, issuers, like providers who provide credit cards.
Right. I mean, yes, you are right. Some percentage of that is us as consumers trying to be a little bit more responsible about our habits and practices. And so we may be cutting up maybe a piece of our plastic. But most of this is a result of the issuers taking marginal customers, customers who don't use their cards all that much, and just shutting them down. American Express was offering some of their platinum card holders up to $300 just to shut down their account.
Oh, really? So how many millions of cards have been shut down, you know?
80 million just in 2009. 80 million fewer pieces of plastic in circulation.
What are you expecting for this year?
I believe that that probably has settled, but, you know, just kind of hearkening back to what we just talked about, of course, there's no telling when the next breach will come. And the other thing that's causing, this is all regards to kind of the viability of credit card accounts, the other thing that happens all the time is fraud. And most Americans in the last year or so have received some sort of notification from their card issuing bank saying something along the lines of, your card may have been compromised, just call us at 1-800-whatever and we'll shut that account down and reissue you a new one. I mean, that's happening all the time. And that might be because of some potential fraud. It might be, you know, of course, the breaches automatically do that. And then the shredding of plastic just has created a very difficult circumstance in 2009 and 2008, really. But we think the shredding has stabilized, but you just never know about the fraud.
How about the state of the economy with people just maxing out their cards, their limits?
Well, you've got a couple of things. Americans always have a love affair with credit limits. So that's our culture. That has never gone away. But now, on top of that, credit limits were just lowered, period. Almost every consumer had their credit limit lowered, no matter what their demographic was. Credit limits were lowered. So if you've already got a culture in which the majority of Americans have at least one card that's very close to or over their credit limit, now reduce credit on top of that and you're up against it. So we see that insufficient funds declines is a huge issue. And so it takes some real thoughtful handling of those declines because, again, they're related to accounts that are theoretically still good and have not been shut down. So those accounts, you need to understand that they need some time to get right with their bank again. And so having a thoughtful approach to potentially recovering those declines is more important than ever. The one related issue to credit limits is delinquency in payment. And so you've got every American with at least one card that's behind by at least one payment or more. That's a problem too. But again, the card is good. So, you know, it hasn't been shut down, so there's reason to apply some rigor to recovering.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com. I see. So if I'm charging a customer's card, it comes up decline. The card still could be valid, but the credit card company could have stopped it from going through because he's delinquent on a payment.
Delinquent or over the limit, and those two are still the number one and two reasons for decline.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. As bad as the breaches have been, and they've really been bad, and as bad as the massive shredding of plastic has been, and it's really been bad, still the big issues are really related to the current state of that customer's account in relationship to credit limits and delinquency.
And so a credit card company, if someone's delinquent one payment, the card company will stop the activity on that card.
It's really up to each individual issuer. They all have their own algorithms regarding what will be approved and what will not. And it might be all the way down to the customer level, you know, the customer's history. But all that is taken into consideration in making the final decision as to whether or not to approve the transaction or not.
Now, a merchant, when I'm charging and running cards through monthly and I'm getting these declines, it's like I'm blind. I can't tell what the real reason is. I can only guess that they don't have money, that they're maxed out, that maybe there's been a card breach.
Depends on your processor. If you have a processor of worth, of value, they do, because Visa and MasterCard gives the processor back a fairly definitive answer regarding the reason for the decline.
And are they all coded?
Yep, they're coded. And so if you understand the coding from your processor, you can then create a decline recovery strategy using tactics unique to the different code you're getting back. Quite frankly, that's what we help merchants do, is really deploy comprehensive decline recovery tactics.
Okay, and I want to talk about some of those solutions, but take me back where you really hone your skills. Can you tell me the story?
It was back at a merchant that I began working for in the early 90s, and when I first went there, it was as a director of operations and really didn't have that much experience with credit cards at all, other than the ones I had in my own wallet, because I had previously been at Reader's Digest, where credit cards were completely absent from that marketing motif. But quickly realized that the project that I was now involved in was about changing consumer behavior regarding the purchase of magazines, and this would be ultimately all credit card, all of the time, all auto-renewal. That required us to eventually, and we can look back with fondness at those days in the mid-90s when we thought it was volatile then, but we wish we were back in those days when there were only a handful of issuers of credit cards. There was no fraud. There was no uniqueness, really, to credit cards. There was a regular card and a gold card, and there was nothing co-branded. The competition wasn't all that great, and, you know, all was kind of good with the world. But even then, we didn't like declines. And so, you know, we work with our processor to really look under every rock to find every weapon, tool, method that we could find to affect greater bottom line performance in credit card processing. And in doing that, you know, we ended up working with our processor, quite frankly, in kind of expanding things that actually could be done. And we're kind of on the forefront of even creating new tools and weapons, and convincing even credit card companies that there's good reason to give greater consideration to recurring or subscription charges because of the downstream revenue that's associated with it, and the realization that we're all going to forfeit that if we don't figure out ways around these unintended problems with their consequences.
Okay, so let's go back to our imaginary company, you know, selling a 1995 subscription. We've got 10,000 members who have signed up to pay for that. What are some of the big mistakes that company may be making or that I may be making when it comes to processing credit cards?
Sure, that's a great question. Well, the mistakes come in two distinct flavors, errors of omission and errors of commission. Mistakes of the omission type are the failures to tap into the programs that the credit card companies themselves have made available to help meet and overcome some of these churn challenges. You've probably heard of it, but the Visa and MasterCard account updater programs.
I don't know what that is. Tell me.
Well, Visa and MasterCard have programs in which their issuers contribute updated account number and updated expiration date information. And if you work with a processor who has tapped into that pool or can tap into that pool, you can now then mitigate a significant percentage of this churn, these breaches, for instance, and this fraud where new credit cards are reissued. You can proactively, through these account updater programs, get the fresh information and ameliorate the situation.
Okay, so for example, my imaginary company, let's say this week I've got 30 declines, and then I can tap that new updater information, but when my customer's committed to paying $19.95 a month, I don't have to go back and get his permission to get that updated information. I can just grab that information, charge the card, and update it myself.
That is correct. The way most merchants do it is, you know, they're constantly sending through their processor slash acquirer, say, all of their accounts that are going to be billed in 5 days, and it goes up to the account updater program. It's scrubbed. The fresh information, if any, is sent back through the processor to the merchant just in time for the billing event, because we make sure all of our merchants tap into this program because it's so powerful. You know, we certainly did see in 2009 crescendoing volume of updates. And so to not be tapped into that means that many, many customer relationships imploded that really didn't need to.
I am assuming you're dealing with companies that have very large files. What if it's a small business, you know, who has 1,000 memberships?
Yeah, that's a great point. Just between us, you know, one of the things that I love about our particular business is that we do have merchants very, very large, but we also have merchants very, very small. It's just one of those particular peccadillos of ours that we love to help small merchants establish themselves on a proper foundation now so they don't have to worry about these things later. Great news about Updater, and this is one thing the card companies did right. The purpose of Updater is to keep customer relationships alive so that everyone in the food chain from the customer all the way through to the issuer is satisfied. Everyone gets their money or their product along the way by virtue of this. So Visa and MasterCard, all they charge you is an enrollment fee, but there's no more monthly fees. After that, you only pay for every update you get back.
How much is the enrollment fee and how much do you pay for an update?
I think the enrollment fee is $300 all in, and then that's for life. And then the update fee, depending on your processor, because that fee will come through the processor, is anywhere from a dime to a quarter apiece.
Wow, that's nothing. So when you say updater, let's say I have Link Point. I don't know if that's my merchant or processor.
Yeah, or gateway. Or a gateway.
See, yeah, that's the thing.
See, that's the problem. And one of the biggest problems for merchants is actually scaling the language barrier and understanding the different, let's put it this way, transaction handlers. The truth of the matter is, to the extent you can, you'd want as few entities handling your transactions on the way out and on the way back from Visa, MasterCard, simply because A, you're probably paying each of them a fee, and B, you know what happens when transactions or footballs are handled too much, things get fumbled and reinterpreted as they're handed off from one entity to another. So that's not anything that we're necessarily going to go through today, but it's really important that folks understand the difference between a gateway, a processor, and an acquirer.
I got to ask you, okay, so I use this thing, Link Point Central Online. I'm in there, and it says First Data.
Right.
So who is First Data?
First Data is your acquirer. Link Point would be your gateway, probably.
Uh-huh. And then what's a level behind the gateway?
In theory, as a merchant, you don't need a gateway. You can go directly to a processor. Or an acquirer. Yes, you could. But if you're a merchant that's small, and especially if you're not recurring, but a lot of recurring subscription merchants have been caught in this web, you are looking for an easy, a simple way to get processing. These link points, authorize.net, and I'm naming names because I don't hold any of them in low regard. They play a role in e-commerce, but unfortunately, they're all things to all people. So when it comes to subscription processing, there's going to come a time very early in the customer's life when they realize that to use some of these gateways and to even use some of these processors is counterproductive because recurring is a discipline. And so, for instance, very few of these gateways, say, for instance, make account updater available. And so if you're a recurring merchant and you have any aspirations, I mean, you just simply have to be using the account updater program. To not have used it in 2009 meant that your bottom line eroded anywhere from 3 to 12%, and it didn't need to.
Right, right. That's powerful. So a small business, like our example of our membership sites, 1,000 members, who could they go to, even though they're small, that would have access to that program, the updater?
Yeah. Visa and MasterCard force all engaging with their account updater programs to go through processors. So you have to actually be processing your transactions with a processor who's hooked up to account updater.
All right. And you could find that with some Google, right?
You could.
Okay. We're talking about biggest mistakes. That's great. So that's one
that's
big mistake.
That's like preemptive best practice that you can use in the battle against churn. And then reactively, you want to be able to identify declines and put them through a decline recovery program. And if you do, because we do, and all of our merchants produce their own kinds of internal reports that show the P&L on recovery by retry attempts over time, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's really important to retry certain declines and not just, you know, in a haphazard way. Matter of fact, you need to be strategic about it because, number one, you don't want to do it in such a way that violates the Visa MasterCard regulation in retrying.
What's a violation? Give me an example.
You can't, what they call, try to hammer the system into submission by retrying every day for 30 days. Matter of fact, according to the Visa regs, you got to space your retries out over at least 4-day intervals, and we would recommend at least that. And don't forget, if you're going to recover declines, in some measure, it's related to a temporary problem that the customer has with their issuer, maybe credit limit, maybe delinquency, probably 95% are those two things. It's not about retrying cards 5 times over the next 5 days. Well, it's about a customer billing cycle that's 28 days long and making sure you have a recovery effort that encompasses that as much as possible.
Why don't you reveal through your research, if I've got a decline, what the best decline recovery program would be? How many days should I space it apart?
Well, I would say 6. You never want to do it times 7. You never want to do it every week on the same day because you might always be retrying a customer's card, you know, the day before payday, and they always have that same problem. Mm-hmm. So a lot, to be quite honest with you, depends on how much you pay for authorizations to your processor. So we take a bunch of things into consideration because a lot of processors charge per authorization attempt. And so we take that into consideration. But all things being equal, we like an every 6-day retry time frame. That way you're trying on a different day each week. You can go out through a billing cycle to day 30 with 5 attempts. Or, and if you're producing the kind of report that you'd like to that shows just how effective you are in each one of those attempts, you may very well find, as we do with almost all of our merchants, that for certain kinds of declines, not all declines, but especially for insufficient funds declines, it may be worth it to even go a couple of times into that second billing cycle. Now, it can't always be the case because some continuity merchants and publishers, they're serving product, right? So they kind of have to make a decision as to whether or not the card is good so that they don't send out the next installment of whatever. But some of them have systems that can delay that pending the receipt of a good payment. But in this day and age where a lot of the subscriptions are for content only and there really aren't that many cost of goods, and juxtaposing the kinds of great recovery you can get against what everyone knows is negligible recovery by trying to pester the customer to giving fresh information, we feel strongly that not irresponsible, but responsible intensive decline recovery through recycling is very, very powerful.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. So bugging the customer and emailing them saying, hey, oops, your credit card declined. Can we get another number, another expiration date? Found that to be the most unproductive.
Yeah, you know, we have many dozens of merchants, and I would say that well over 90% of them at least allow greater than half of the recycling to go through before they even mention to the customer that they have a problem, because the recovery is fairly effective. So let's just say you're merchant X and you have a customer on a monthly billing paradigm and everything is going smoothly, and all of a sudden month four, you know, you get a decline, and now you've set the stage to retry it in 6 days and then try it again after that in 6 days. Well, if you're going to get 25% recovery on that first billing, again, these are numbers I'm just throwing out there, they're not, you know, unreasonable numbers. You don't want to be getting that first decline and then sending a message out to your customer saying, you know, we had a problem with your card, but then, oh, by the way, on day six you go to retry it and it's good. I'm sorry, customer, I was wrong. Your card is fine. You know, you don't want to send mixed messages. So most companies, we help them evaluate where it makes sense to begin the communications with the customer about the problem that they have. But since recovery is very powerful, you know, in the first two or three attempts, most of them won't engage the customer until at least, and a lot of them wait till the recycling is completely done and it's a proven kind of fact that they're not going to get it to go through before they engage the customer on the problem.
All right, so what's another mistake merchants are making? How about when they gather the information on the order form? Have you found asking for an alternative card a good strategy?
Well, you know, that's a controversial one because you got to really be clear with the customers why you want that. And, you know, that can often be a surprise to them. So the truth of the matter is very few merchants actually do that. I think one of the interesting data points that we're seeing have been confirmed by some of our merchants. I think we published it once in a conference, and I know that one of our merchants allowed the data to be made public, and that is something as simple as the security code, the CVV as they call it, making sure that you ask for that. That's something that obviously increases protection. And it also now seems to be that we've turned the corner to where abandonment is more likely when you don't ask for it than when you do.
What do you mean by that?
Well, marketers used to be really concerned that if we ask for the CVV, customers are going to bail because, as you know, with direct marketing, anytime you have to ask customers for extra information, they're likely to bail. But now it seems like most people who do transact on the web have been doing that for a while in their experience, and now the shoe's on the other foot where if you're a merchant and you're not asking for CVV, they're not going through with the sale because they're concerned about your lack of concern about security. And then the same merchant and a couple of merchants have gone the extra mile and said, hey, not only does abandonment decrease, but conversion to the subscription actually increases with that kind of customer.
Can we talk about declines? I was reading somewhere here about why expiration dates no longer matter.
Well, they matter in that you would get a better approval, all things being equal, and the account number is good, but your expiration date has gone stale.
Like, this is a big problem for me. You know, I have people on a membership site, the card comes expired, and I can't charge it.
Yeah, and the saddest thing about that is, of course, that in fact, as a merchant, that's actually a problem you want, because stale expiration dates, as they accumulate on their file, mean that you've got customers of long standing, right? So that's exactly what you want. So therefore, the pity of losing customers because account number didn't change, it's just that every 2, 3, or 4 years, the issuers issue new plastic just with new expiration dates on it. The fact that you'd have customer relationships implode because of that is absolutely ridiculous. So a number of years ago, the card companies did a couple of things to really try to limit that problem. Number one, they created what's known as the recurring indicator. And again, this would be dependent on your processor and whether or not they accommodate the recurring indicator. And you can always tell the processors who have a predisposition and have skill in processing recurring merchants. And if you ask questions, there's no processor who's skilled and experienced and disciplined in recurring that would say, no, I don't offer account updater. But if you ask your processor, hey, and you're a serious recurring merchant, even if you're not big, but you're serious and that's your business, and you ask, hey, do you offer account updater? Well, you know, if they say no, you know, after it being available now for 7 years, I think you'd kind of have to say, well, yeah, I'm not so sure this is an acquirer or processor that is ever going to, well, they certainly at this point in time aren't that disciplined in recurring, because account updater is really part and parcel, as is this recurring indicator that was created by Visa, MasterCard, and American Express about, man, it must be 8 years ago now. It's a marker that you include as a merchant in your authorization transaction for the recurring charge that indicates, hey, this is a recurring charge.
What do I need to do as that merchant to make sure that that reoccurring indicator is on that
card?
Well,
that's a great point, because in the initial sale, whether it's online or on the phone or in the mail, you don't need the recurring indicator at that particular point in time. You've got the customer online, you're doing the authorization, and you really don't need the recurring indicator. What the recurring indicator, though, then is meant to do is be included in ongoing recurring charges. So when it's time for the auto renew, whenever it is.
Right, right.
You include the recurring indicator in a particular field in the authorization record that goes out to your processor, and they forward that along with the transaction into the system, and it was designed so that the issuers would see that this charge is related to a subscription, and that, you know, it was just kind of a notification that, hey, if you decline this card at this particular point in time, just know that you're declining this and all the downstream revenue that is associated with it. And so it was an opportunity to create another factor in the algorithm for approval, and it might give the issuer greater pause about declining it, because they would also be forfeiting the downstream revenue. So that was one reason for the creation of the recurring indicator.
Let me ask you this. So let's say I have a subscriber and I enter his data into my order form, and then he's on a recurring payment. So I have a field that I could click that says recurring payment, and I click yes. It says charge the customer once every month, beginning at this date, end after this date, retry transactions. So in this form here, when that goes to the processor, and because I've programmed it to hit the card every month, is that my recurring indicator?
Whatever your processor requires from you, in that required layout would be a field for you to populate the recurring indicator.
It would say on there recurring indicator?
Right. It would probably be what's known as the transaction type field, or something that sounds like that. This is a recurring transaction. So, you know, the customer came on with you, you charge them the first time, now it's time for their first rebill, automatic rebill.
Right.
You send the transaction to your gateway or your processor, and if you're with a processor that accommodates the recurring indicator, there'll be a place for you to put that.
All right, so I need to ask my processor, are y'all handling recurring indicators?
Exactly right.
And I want one that does, because there's something with the decline.
Yeah, because it does two things. Number one, it alerts the issuer to the fact that this is recurring, and all things being equal, the issuer is less likely to decline it because it sees that there's downstream revenue going to be associated with this. But the other reason to use this recurring indicator is to help with this expiration date problem that we talked about that really is an issue. Now, the other thing that was developed, you know, almost a decade ago was for recurring merchants, if you have a stale date on file, you know, obviously you collected a good expiration date when you began the relationship with them, and when you qualified them as a customer, you sent it through with the good expiration date. If it goes stale during the lifetime of the relationship, you should be able to, in tandem using the recurring indicator, send through your processor, depending on how they want it. It depends on the processor. Some processors want you to just go ahead and send the stale date through. They'll recognize it as stale, and they'll blank it out and send it through blank to Visa MasterCard along with the recurring indicator, and it basically tells Visa MasterCard, this is recurring. We qualified it the first time. It shouldn't need an expiration date from this point on. And for the most part, that gets them all through. Doesn't get them all through, but it gets a lot of them through.
So look at the bottom line. You've got a company doing 10,000 subscriptions, and they have a processor that has no reoccurring indicator. They don't know anything about it. And then you've got company B here who's doing it the right way with the recurring indicator. That's big bucks.
It's huge.
Tell me a story. Give me a case study from someone that you've worked with. How huge this is. Paint a picture, even if it's a big account.
Usually what ends up happening with someone like yourself, when you get to the point, and maybe this is your experience, and maybe it's not, but since you sound like you're working through a gateway, and you might even be working with a processor that doesn't accommodate this, but let's just say for the sake of argument, we come across a lot of merchants who, when they have a stale date on file, what they try to do is guess the new expiration date. And you can make some good educated guessing by just incrementing the stale date that you have on file by a couple of years or 3 years. And by doing kind of the best incrementing you can do, you know, you could probably get 40 to 50% of those to go through. I don't know what your experience is.
I've done the guessing, and I can get some to go through, but a lot I can't. So if I was guessing, is there a secret to how they issue the expiration dates? Is it a certain number of years? Are they all different? Is there a best guess?
Well, it's all different, but it's still fairly consistent on the months that it previously was, just with an added 2 or 3 years. Although now we see cards that are being reissued with 4, 5, and 6 years.
So if you keep the month the same and you can try it at 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 years and maybe get it to go through.
That would be a good thing to do when it comes to retrying. You can't just do it on consecutive days because that's a violation of the Visa. You got to space it out. Remember, you got to keep 4 days in between
each try,
which is fine. But it's much better to send, if you're working with a processor who really is skilled in the art and science of recurring billing, they'll tell you, hey, just send it through as blank or send it through as stale and we'll blank it out. And they know what the issuer is looking for. And so we've seen, as far as case studies are concerned, merchants that come to us who were with a processor that required a date to be put in. And they get 40 to 50%. But then when we move them to a processor who knows how to handle stale expiration dates, we'll easily double the performance of their best guessing strategy.
That's just huge.
It is huge.
What's some other strategies that can increase the recovery rate on these charges?
So you've got account updater, as you know, mm-hmm. we talked about. You've got the recurring indicator. You've got then the optimized expiration date handling. You've got comprehensive decline recovery program. If you have a lot of American Express, they have a program that they don't publicize very much. It's called their continuity billing service, which is really like Visa's and MasterCard's account updater programs, except that it's something they quietly do behind the scenes for you if they enroll you in that service. It's a very powerful service, and they kind of manage the churn behind the scenes for you, reconnecting automatically your business to a new card of that customer's, even if they lost or had to have their previous one shut down that they originally ordered your service on?
Yeah, let me ask you this. You know, with the whole mortgage debacle and the mortgage crisis, and you hear about consumer credit, that there's going to be a huge crisis, like, you know, credit limits are down and people are going to have no money eventually because, you know, they're maxing out their cards. What's your inside take on that for the next couple of years?
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm certainly not an economist, but I am a normal consumer like everyone else. And it's interesting, they just had the Merchant Risk Council, which is a gathering of card-not-present merchants, a lot of recurring merchants, and the chief economist of Visa was there. And I was not able to be there, but I could be wrong, but from my understanding, he did not present a rosy picture in the near future. There was a poll, and maybe I can send you a link for it. I just saw it yesterday. It was a Rasmussen poll of all things, which is usually more politically oriented, but it was a poll of bankers and others, and they're forecasting continued delinquency and credit limit issues of the same kinds of proportions as 2009. So, again, it really behooves merchants to do the due diligence here, to deploy as many of these best practices as possible.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Let's say I wanted to work with you and we talk and it's a fit and we do an analysis of what I'm doing. Is it a hourly fee or?
It's rarely hourly because there's always so much more to this than meets the eye.
Yeah.
What we try to do is enter a partnership that's so attractive to the customer that it's a no-brainer for them. We want them to know that they're not going to be left high and dry. We can do an assessment, issue recommendations. We can even facilitate discussions with potential world-class processors. And then getting to the point of health and safety and even the ongoing monitoring and layering in of enhancements because environmental conditions change over time, we tend to just have ongoing, almost recurring relationships with our customers. I would say our average relationship with a merchant is, you know, 3 to 4 years just because the insurance policy we are, in addition to having helped them get straightened out in the first place. We've done a lot of this in the last couple of years. Big merchants who have full-time departments on credit cards have just come to us and said, give us the once-over. And so we've done intensive assessments on them, and that would have been just a one-time charge. But we tend to price modestly just because that's not trying to be self-serving. But we know from our experience that while you often need to act fairly quickly, it takes time to get to where you need to be. A lot of recurring merchants have significant chargeback issues and problems. They've dealt with affiliate marketers and they just didn't know what hit them. And so we're in the business of not only doing those things we just said, but we're experts at chargeback mitigation, helping get that under control. Because in this day and age, Visa, MasterCard particularly are sensitive to chargeback issues and they're really going hard after merchants who can't get that under control.
You mentioned affiliate marketers, so an online marketer who has an affiliate program, that could come back to bite them, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Give me a story, because this is really important. There's a lot of online marketers who listen to this stuff.
Well, I could tell you the story, and I can't name names, but
okay.
Some of your most trusted brand names that you would never believe, who had chargeback rates historically that didn't even have a pulse. And, you know, they got into affiliate marketing, did nothing to protect themselves because they didn't really know how to protect themselves, trusted the affiliate networks, and then just got the kind of garbage that almost immediately put them in deep trouble with Visa and MasterCard. And, you know, you get addicted to the volume only to find out that most of it's not good.
And you lose your ability to accept credit cards.
Absolutely. Or you have to completely shut down this channel, which had given you so much hope. And so there are ways to do it, and a lot of it, you know, has to do with the protections you put in place, whether it's not just CVV, but GOIP address blocking and velocity screening and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, a whole other group of third parties has arisen to try to help merchants operate with affiliates and not get burnt. And, you know, you've got the third-party fraud protection companies, the certified counts, 41st parameters, have all risen up in the last few years to try to help merchants be able to sift out the bad stuff, allow in the good stuff, and increase their bottom line. But to go into affiliate marketing blindly and think you're not going to be negatively impacted, well, you have to have lived a pretty good life to have that happen.
And it's just because you have no control over your affiliates and who they're marketing to.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing, of course. And, of course, most merchants know by now that their arrangements with their affiliates need to be, like, net of chargebacks, net of declines, net of refunds, you know, all that kind of stuff.
All right, very interesting. You have a couple reports on your website for anyone who wants to kind of educate themselves. Aren't there a couple downloads? And I saw a PowerPoint slide presentation that you did for Marketing Sherpa.
Yeah, sure. I think I have some things out there. I think there's a white paper that you can look at that talks about how to select your payment processor.
Do you have any samples of any? Oh, I guess you don't endorse or recommend any. Just educate us on what we need
and
just go get it.
Yeah, talk to folks about that. Not that they have to engage us. We give away, as you can see, as we're doing now, a lot of free advice. But the interesting thing at the end of the day is how to parlay all of this. And that's what we try to help merchants do, to put this in place in a sensible fashion and then understand the key performance indicators that result to see if what we've done is optimized and how to continually enhance them. And if you're with the right kind of processor, the back-end reporting system is robust, and then that puts us all in a position to actually really read and digest the results of all that we've done.
So someone's listening to this, and they definitely believe that they're with the wrong merchants. Tell me about what are some of the services you provide. Let's say someone heard this, they want to talk to you. What's the best way for them to get in touch with you, first of all?
Sure. Well, the best ways are either through our website, which is paullarsonconsulting.com, or by phone at 845-896-1753. It's not just me. We have an array of skilled folks who are experienced not only in transaction handling, but also PCI, compliance and security and analytics. A lot of merchants end up where they're at out of ignorance or out of expedience. They wanted to get started and they reached out. They found, you know, an easy way to connect. But a lot of them also concentrate on price. You know, what is this going to cost me? And they're looking at their fees. And of course, we believe strongly that you shouldn't overpay. But we believe also that performance, the kind of issues we just talked about today, I wouldn't say dwarf fees in importance, but we believe at the end of the day, aligning yourself with the best possible processor at the best possible price, deploying the industry's best practices for recurring merchants, that's what we help affect. We don't have any partnership with any particular processors. We have a strong understanding of who does what well, and also we have a strong understanding of fit when it comes to culture and a merchant. So we love to talk to prospects. We administer, you know, a fairly significant upfront survey and assessment so we understand what they're doing today, what they sell, and ultimately, you know, we don't force anything down their throats, but we facilitate discussions with best in class so that we can help them get to a place of health and safety and effectiveness when it comes to their credit card processing. Because there's a lot of travail, and 2010 has a lot of other extra added problems in store.
Okay, perfect. This has been awesome. This has been some incredible information, and I appreciate it, Paul, you sharing with my listeners. I really do.
I'm honored, really. It's a privilege, and I thank you for sticking with me.
One more time, spell out the name of your website for anyone who wants to find out more about you and your services.
Sure. Company is Paul Larson. That's Larson with an E, Larson Consulting, and that is the website, www.paullarsonconsulting.com. Go there and get to us through that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.